And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPomme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wieldon. How's it going, Johannes?
How's it going with you, Connor? Listen, much like the Montreal Canadiens, I'm just going to start this pod, maybe the first third of it, I'm just going to be like monotone and dead. Is that cool with you? Is that consistent with our team, right?
Yeah, this week, yes. It's
I'm just, so just going to speak like this the whole time.
I'll just throw words out every once in a while.
Oh, man. I was really pumped for last night. I was pumped for last night. And they laid an egg, a rotten egg, Connor.
It kind of bookended the week that way. So we'll get there. I think it's the freshest, so it's the most upsetting part of the whole thing. But I also wanted to wish you a happy belated John Tavares Appreciation Day. you were very, took some time out of your day to make sure John Tavares felt good after getting booed in New York.
I just, to me, that sums up the things I don't like about the Maple Leafs. It's just a little too much. And I mean, there are reasons to be thankful for John Tavares, but let's wait till he does something, you know, not as some sort of makeup for his poor treatment in Brooklyn or whatever. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I was talking about it this morning with someone actually who writes on Last Word on Sport Hockey, and he's a Leafs fan, obviously. So, you know, they kind of, I guess he's sticking up for his team, and that's fine. It's just my whole problem with it is it was so unorganic, you know, it was his whole like. Since the game in New York, it was this whole, like, we got to make John Tavares feel better about himself. And it's like, if he's that delicate, I think that speaks to a bigger problem than anything else. Like, my whole thing is it wasn't organic. The whole thing was staged. I mean, the fans were in on it, which, okay, fine. If it was just the fans, maybe you could get on it. The media was in on it. The team did that thing. And I think the bigger issue of the whole thing was, you know, I'm sure they were expecting what they got, maybe not to the extent they got it in New York, but I'm sure they were. It was, I mean, I don't know if you saw that video beforehand.
I did. I did. I enjoyed it.
You knew it was going to be rough. You knew it was going to be rough, and that's fine. I think part of the problem is they got blown out in that game, and I think it allowed the fans in New York to kind of keep building and building and building. You know, had it been a close game or had the Leafs won, you know, they would have been whatever, but it wouldn't have been as, I don't think it would have escalated to the level it got to. You know, where people were like, you know, what they chanting, like, wear your pajamas or something like that.
Pajama boy. I believe they call them pajama boy.
And you know what? One thing I think gets lost in all this, and I know this is a Montreal Canadiens podcast, so we're not going to stick too deep, but it's, you know, the Islanders, if you're a fan of the Islanders, that team is kind of, they haven't been on solid ground for, I'll say, at least 10 years.
That's not a pun, right? That's not some sort of funny reference to the okay, just making sure.
No, you're right. I wasn't going there, but and to have this sort of their this like all-star player, you know, I wouldn't say he's a generational talent, but he's a very he's one of the top, let's say, 15 players in the NHL. Excuse me. Kind of just after the whole season of saying he's going to stay leaving, and then, you know, you're supposed to be happy for him because he's going to his hometown team. It's like he might have just given, I mean, granted the Islanders are playing well this year, but, you know, when it all happened, who knew? Everyone thought the Islanders were going to tank. And, you know, who knows what that would have meant for the team in terms of where they're going to play, where, you know, in terms of which, you know, if they're going to play in Brooklyn or if they're going to play in, you know, which arena they're playing in, or if they're even going to, you know, in 5 years, if they're even still going to be there. So there's a lot more at play than just, you know, Tavares. I mean, you know, like just him leaving the team. I think it was the whole situation kind of bubbling up. And I just think, you know, the whole other side of everyone's like, well, we got to make John Tavares feel better. And then the thing at the beginning of the game where they, like, give him his own moment because, you know, he had to endure Long Island. You know, it was just kind of, like, reeked. And I use the word insecurity to describe, like, it speaks to insecurity with Leafs fans, Leafs media, Leafs as a team. You know, they got to, like, we got to we got to make them feel better. Why do people not like them? It's like, why don't people like us? It's like, just stop. Just, you know.
So
just
for
take
me,
your medicine and move on.
I'm with you 100%. And like, I'm not a big fan of the overuse of the term snowflake and the whole idea about, you know, how everyone's weak. And, you know, I think in general, we have done a lot to, you know, identify, if not address, some of the sort of unconscious ways that we've done harm over the years as a majority culture on various minority cultures. But this kind of thing just gets on my nerves. And it's not because, it's, as you said, completely inauthentic. He hasn't done anything to earn the accolades. I mean, he's having a great year, whatever, but he hasn't done anything to earn the accolades. And to have it come right after he takes a little bit of heat for what happened in New York and the way that he left. Like, come on. We have to be – it speaks to – you know, I've got little kids, right, and they're in school. And one of the things that they learn in school is about resilience. And that is the idea that you do not hear yes all the time. You do not get what you want all the time. Life is full of adversity, and it's about how you respond to that adversity. And to me, this smacked of infantilization of a professional hockey player who gets paid millions of dollars to play this game. And the way that the Leafs treated him was like he was like a precious little flower that could not handle the glare of the sunlight. And I did not think it was the Maple Leafs' finest hour. And I am definitely not a Leafs fan, but I have a lot of respect for what they've done as an organization. I don't think this is not going to age well. He's going to be mocked more for this, I think, than for taking a little bit of heat from Islanders fans, who, whether you agree or not, are allowed to have an opinion, are allowed to voice that opinion, are allowed to use social media to make their point heard. You don't have to like it, but, you know, we're all just going to have to tolerate that other people have opinions and they're able to express them. So for the Leafs to do what they did, I think I agree with that, the terminology. I think it speaks to a broader insecurity that I don't think is, it's wild speculation, but I don't think it speaks to the overall strength of the player if you feel you need to do this to put a slap a Band-Aid on a little, you know, niece skin flint that he got from falling off his bicycle in New York.
Yeah, and just to cap this whole thing up, and we'll get to the Habs soon, is just, you know, I don't know if you saw Sean Avery's little rant, and I think Sean Avery should just shut the hell up. So, you know, there's like, he came out on a rant and was ripping on Islanders fans about what they did and how John Tavares had, and he's right, John Tavares has the right to do whatever the hell he wants. They have the right to do what they want, but I mean, if you know a little bit of the history between Sean Avery and the New York Islanders, you know, I think one year he was scratched and he tried to pick a fight with an Islanders, like, front PR guy or a front office guy, you know? It just speaks to Sean Avery, like, John Avery's an idiot, I think. I mean, I don't like him as a player. I think he's just an attention-seeking personality. He's outside of hockey, and he just waited for this little thing to come on and have his little vitriol spill because he has an issue with the Islanders. And I think he's just a tool, and I don't like him, and I think he should, just shut up.
So I want to link this to, you know, a broader point that we've at times tried to explore on this pod, but this idea of psychology and sports psychology. And anybody who says that games don't matter and that they're just all one more in a long 82-game season really hasn't been paying attention because, you know, look, the Islanders have definitely overperformed. I think pound for pound, the Leafs are a better team. They faced off this week and the Leafs got trounced. And if you don't think that psychology plays into it, I got a bridge to sell you. Quite near actually where the Islanders play. So I just think that I just think that this question of psychology and individual teams and how teams come together and how they face adversity, this is incredibly important. It's incredibly important in the last month of the season. And it's incredibly important for the Montreal Canadiens, who I think this week I don't think we have the answer yet of whether this is a playoff team. And I don't want you to tell me, the way Gary Galley was last night, that this team deserves to be in the playoffs. Don't tell me they deserve to be. Tell me they've earned their spot. And I feel this week, I'm not 100% sure this team has earned their spot in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, it was an interesting week, and we touched on it. They kind of bookended by two very lackluster performances, but we'll start at the beginning. The night of the trade deadline, and if we want to talk about it, we can, but, you know, Montreal didn't do anything really to the trade deadline. They acquired Jordan Wheel, who still hasn't played a game yet.
But so apparently, if you listen to the commentary at Connor, Jordan Wheel is the second coming. I mean, the way they talk about this guy, he's going to get on the ice and there's going to be like a halo that comes off as he's going to score 50 goals. It's unbelievable.
Well, I think he could be a useful player. I know he was in Philadelphia. He played on the power play some, and I know in Phoenix he was asked to do a different thing. I don't think he's going to be a, you know, obviously they're hyping him up, but I mean, I think he was probably a better addition to the fourth line than, say, Dale Weiss, who, you know, most Montreal Canadiens fans have a bit of a soft spot for Dale Weiss, but I think, you know,
his age is showing. His age is showing, and he's only 30, so.
He's only 30, but yeah, he's definitely slowed down. You know, I don't know why they're so reluctant to get him in the game, but fine, whatever. So anyway, the Habs inactivity, we'll call it, at the trade deadline, kind of spilled over into their play. I don't know if it was just sort of, excuse me, a hangover from the comeback loss to the Leafs the Saturday before, but the game against the Devils, the Canadiens were asleep for the first two periods, and, you know, they lost the game 2-1, and New Jersey is a pretty awful team right now in terms of where they are in the standings, and essentially they just traded a couple of their players too, so they were really shorthanded, and Montreal thought, it just seemed like, and I don't know if it's just sort of, well, I'll talk about it at a bigger point, I guess, but, you know, Montreal isn't a good enough team to just show up and win games yet. And I feel like part of what happened this week in some of the games was they thought, well, we're better than them in the standings. We can just show up and we'll win. And, I mean, they were asleep until Paul Byron scored that goal. But, I mean, that was in the third period. I don't know, I can't exactly when, but it was, you know, he scored in the third period. And then they think they can just turn it on and win. And, you know, they don't have a team like that. Toronto, and, no, going back to Toronto, the Leafs have a team where they can maybe pull that off because they have three really skilled lines. Whereas Montreal doesn't have that yet. And so you can't assume you're just going to beat a team because, you know, even though they're doing great this year, last year they were the team that everyone just walked over. You know, they're not that far removed from being that team that was god-awful. So, you know, it was really disappointing to see that performance. And, you know, especially because we knew how important the game on Saturday was. It would have, and the, you know, them playing three teams that were all below them in the standings, they should have taken advantage, and maybe there wouldn't have been as much. I mean, there still would have been a big game against the Penguins, again, which we'll get to. But it would have been a little easier to stomach what happened on Saturday had they swept the games leading up to it.
Sure. Well, okay, I agree with that. And I'll just go one step further. If they had played as well as they had played later in the week on Monday night against New Jersey, I could have handled the loss last night a little better. But you split the games this week. Last night's an incredibly important game, given that Pittsburgh is in the playoff hunt for a wild card spot, just like you know, four other teams, the three of which are only really going to make it. I mean, they didn't show up in New Jersey you know, they didn't, as you say, they didn't take advantage of their situation. What's weird is less than 24 hours later, against, you know, let's face it, one of the weakest teams right now, you know, whether it's in terms of player personnel or whether it's just whatever the mojo that happens around a team that's consistently losing, they blew Detroit out of the water. And for an instant, all was right with the world. So I don't know how you square, you know, what happened on Monday night with what happened on Tuesday night. I mean, obviously the teams are a different caliber, but Montreal level of effort was completely different. And once again, we see this sort of inconsistent. I mean, you could also say that the start of the Detroit game wasn't particularly great. The first period was a little more even. Yeah. How did you see the Detroit game?
I mean, Tatar got that goal. I mean, it was a beautiful goal, but it was also kind of lucky where he got that. It was like a flip pass. You know, and he kind of held off the defender and was able to score. It looked great, but I don't think... And Montreal outshot them, but I mean, considering Detroit, especially, they had just traded Gustav Nyquist, who's probably one of their best forwards. Not that Detroit was getting a ton of chances, but Detroit was getting a lot of zone time. And I know you can sort of say, well, who cares as long as they're not getting chances? And fine, I agree with that on some level. But the fact is, there was a lot of points in that first period, especially, where it seemed like Detroit was outworking Montreal. And, you know, at this time of year, sometimes it can be dangerous to play a team that's out of the playoff race and knows they're not, because they don't really have anything to lose. So they'll be playing kind of wild and a little faster and looser. But it was just, you know, it was just, like I said, it was a little odd that Detroit was kind of pushing the play in the first period a little bit, I found. And, I mean, they got the goal. I think that kind of settled things down a little bit for Montreal. And then, yeah, in the second period, they just kind of took off. And it seems like every other shot was going in the net. So, I mean, yeah, you win a game 8-1, you know, I at the time I said it, I'm like, wow, that was a get-right game I've ever seen one, because, you know, Andrew Shaw got his first career hat trick, Max Domi, I think, had 4 points, you know, it seemed like everyone was getting involved, Armia scored a goal, the only people that didn't get involved were Arturi Lehkonen and Victor Mete, which, you know, was unfortunate, you know, just, that's the way their season's going, but, you know, it seemed like everyone was kind of got a little right after the Toronto loss, and then the loss to New Jersey was a nice bounce back, I think, to see them kind of, once they kind of got going, to sort of just crush the Red Wings, and that's something they've kind of been doing all season anyway. So that was, I think you would agree, it was a little refreshing to see.
Great to see. You're not going to get too many of those in a season, and anytime we score 8, you know, that's fantastic. And you're right, for a moment, it made us forget about the problems in New Jersey. But, you know, we come to Friday night against the Rangers, and once again, the Canadiens had a slow start in the first period. I actually kind of like this Rangers team. I like how they skated. It's a similar style to what Montreal tries to do, except they have a little more size. So it was kind of, I actually thought the game was closer than the score suggested. But once again, Montreal started slow. They got better. What did you get to see this game? Did you watch the Rangers skate?
Yeah, no, I watched it all. Yeah, it was, again, it had not been for Carey Price. This game might have not been, you know, Carey Price after the one goal, which I think was a weird deflection, kept the Canadiens in the game for the first almost half an hour. I mean, even into the second period, I think, up until Brendan Gallagher scored, the Canadiens were kind of sleepwalking again.
I agree.
And, you know, again, it's a weird trend that they seem to be on this week. They're not getting up for games, and this is not a good thing, because if you're the Canadiens, you know, you need to start playing. I mean,
there's only 17 left. I mean, come on.
Exactly. And you can't take, and they're not a good enough team to take a period off. And I'm not, you know, and they did it they took at least one period off every game this week. And it kind of bit them in the ass. I mean, I know against the Rangers, they were able to finally, once they got going, they got going. And I wouldn't say it was quite as dominant as in New Jersey, but, you know, they kind of, once they got into the game and got their legs moving, because especially in the first period, they looked like they were in quicksand, or they were skating in mud or whatever. Luckily they couldn't get anything going. And then, yeah, once Gallagher scored, after Price made some key saves to keep it at 1-0, you know, they took off. Armia got a hat trick, which is, you know, it's good for him. His first career hat trick, apparently, you know, the last 10 days is just the Canadiens just giving out first career hat tricks.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I was really happy for Armia, because I liked his game. I think he brought a physical presence, and we just haven't seen him finish. And this week, you know, he finished, and good for him.
Yeah, same thing with Andrew Shaw, you know, against the Red Wings. It was good to see these guys kind of get rewarded. I know Andrew Shaw is having a very good season, but yeah, Armia is one of those guys that, you know, he hadn't scored in X number of games, and then he finally, you know, against Detroit, he got one, and then it kind of carried over into the Rangers game, and, you know, it was good to see the Canadiens bounce back, and, you know, the game looked a little closer at the end because, you know, the Rangers got a late goal and then the Canadiens put an empty net goal in. But I mean, once the Habs kind of got rolling, they kind of sucked the life out of the Rangers a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, I think what the Rangers are doing is not dissimilar to what Montreal has done. And I think the era of this sort of the quick turnaround by trying to shed older contracts, keeping a couple of key pieces, and then really investing in speed and youth and giving opportunities, I think that's a winning formula. So I don't think Rangers fans have to be worried about being in the wilderness for too long. Whatever they're doing, I think is, you know, they outskated Montreal for half that game. Montreal, you know, came back and scored some key goals. So pound for pound, I think Montreal's a better team right now. But like this, it wasn't a pushover by any means.
No, not at all. And I think a lot of people assumed it might be just, again, because of where the Rangers are in the standings. And kind of towards, kind of like to what I was saying about the other games, you know, they're playing these teams they should beat because they're out of the playoffs. But, you know, when you're a team that sort of knows you're out of the playoffs, it lets you play a little freer, I think. You can take weird chances you might not take. And so if you're not expecting that or ready for it, it can be a little bit of an adjustment if you're for the Canadians.
Yeah.
But, yeah, again, it was good to see them sort of get their footing and then come back, and they didn't let the game get out of hand. Kind of like what happened last night, and I guess we're going to finally get to the Pittsburgh game, which was the big game of the week for the Canadians. You know, as you mentioned, the Habs, the Hurricanes, Penguins, and Columbus Blue Jackets are all kind of locked in this battle for, there's the wild card, and I guess for the other teams in the Metropolitan, you know, there's the third place in the division as well. But one of those teams isn't going to make the playoffs. And this was one of those, you know, four-point games, and Montreal came out of the gate again asleep. And we'll talk about everything that happened, but I kind of found it interesting. I saw on Twitter someone posted, like, weird period. The Canadians kind of dominated the Penguins, but they're down 3-0. I was like, well, not really. I mean, okay, yeah, the Habs ended up with more shots. And it looked bad that the Penguins had 3 goals on 4 shots, but I think only one of those shots were really, you know, like the first one, Jordy Benn, I don't know what the hell he's doing there, but he essentially just turned it over, and, it, you know, 2 seconds later, it's off the post, off price, and in the net. You know, then Malkin scores. I think that puck got tipped on the way through. I think it went off of...
I don't think Price had a shot on Malkin's. The Crosby turnover was... Or the turnover, essentially, that ends up on Crosby's stick is not a good look. And whether Price should have had that or not, I think, is questionable. I just... Anytime you get 3 goals on 4 shots, I think you got to ask yourself some tough questions, especially because they rode Price pretty hard this week. And so if you buy into the fatigue question, it was already a 50-50 call. I know it's at home in Montreal, but, you know, part of me thought, look, bring Nemo in for the rest of the first period. Figure out if Price is ready to do this. They needed to be shaken up. And the problem was, they didn't. Nothing fundamentally changed in that game. They got down early, and they just sort of kept on losing. And Matt Murray had a good game and made some key stops. Price made some amazing stops after the first period, but I don't. It was not a team that looked like a playoff contender last night, and it was a shame to watch it. Go ahead.
I felt a little bit kind of like last year. Like, even I was saying at the beginning of the Rangers game, it felt like watching the Canadians from last year, you know, getting dominated. And, you know, the first thing, because the Penguins scored 3 goals so quickly, it was just kind of like, it really sucked the life out of the game, I think. And it was just too bad. I mean, the Habs did kind of push back, but I mean, pushing back after you're down 3-0, not doesn't feel like disingenuous, but, you know, it's like, where was this to start the game? You needed this right away. And I think kind of a little bit ironically, their power play looked a little dangerous against the Penguins.
Agreed.
Granted, it couldn't finish. And, you know, had they gotten a power play goal there, or had Max Domi scored, I think he had a breakaway at the end of the first period. You know, they got one of these goals to... Sorry, you know, or was it the beginning of the second? Anyway, Max Domi had a chance at the end, you know, to make it 3-1. And they couldn't get it 3-1. And if they could have got, you know, who knows if the first period ends 3-1... Who knows what happens in that game, but it was 3-0, and then they had to sort of keep pushing, and then it was, I think did Gallagher make it 3-1 at one point in the second period, and then I think not too long after Gensel
put it away, essentially
4-1, and it was done. And it's to your point, maybe not pull Carey Price, because I think, you know, it's obviously clear that the team has zero faith in Antti Niemi, which, again, I want to talk to you about the trade deadline, because, you know, if you don't have faith in your backup goalie, and then get a goddamn backup goalie you believe in.
I'm with you,
but.
But here's the thing.
If you're not going to take out Price, call a timeout.
Yeah,
like I know they started playing better after there was a TV timeout. But, I mean, what are you saving that timeout for? I used to get so mad when Michel Therrien would do that. I'm like, I'm saving it just in case I need it at the end of the game. Well, to be able to be in a situation to be needing a timeout at the end of the game means the game's close. Right now the game's not close. The air's getting blown out of the water. Someone's got to settle something. Do something. I mean, even if you wanted to pull Carey Price just for the period, just to sort of shake everyone up, that's fine too. But you got to do something. You can't just.
You got to. You have to do something. And this is why. Look, you are heading out west next week.
It's already too late. Yeah.
You need this game. you're down, mm-hmm. and you can you want to say, look, it's not Carey Price's fault, though. You don't need to pull him. He's a franchise goalie. You don't pull him at home on Saturday night. You know what? You need to shake things up. You don't have faith in Nemo. This is your chance to rediscover whatever the Nemo magic is. Yeah. And make this team play a little smarter defensively for the rest of the first period. Bring Price back out at the start of the second. Having now you know, tick them off, yell at them if you need to, and get the team ready to go. Look, you could say you don't want to piss Carey Price off. We still have the rest of the season, hopefully the playoffs to go. You don't want to embarrass him like this. But you know what? You needed that game last night.
Yeah, and I don't even think if you're going to pull the goalie in that situation, you're not, because you know, there's times you can pull the goalie because he's not playing well. There's times you pull the goalie because the team's not playing well. And I think to start that game, you pull the goalie because the team wasn't playing well.
Yeah.
And yeah, they ended up coming on. But again, it was too late. And it was a very bad look, you know, inside the first minute, they're down 1-0. And it was just, and you can chalk it up to say, okay, it was one of those games or periods or whatever, but the Canadiens can't afford to have one of those games like that. They already had one this
week. Well, that's the point. They're having too many of these. You can't call it bad luck if it keeps on happening, right?
Yeah, so lately they've had, you could say that Toronto game, they had one of those where it got away from them. The New Jersey game where they didn't show up, and then this one where they came out so flat, and you go down 3-0. And I guess, you know, they did it, like we kind of mentioned, all week. And, you know, okay, you can sort of survive it against the Rangers. And even against the Devils, they kind of survived it. They were only down 2-0. They just waited too long to put it into gear. The Penguins game, I know the Penguins are banged up, especially on the blue line, which is also a little disappointing. They couldn't take advantage of
exactly,
that.
Exactly. This Matt is Murray's not like a playing, full team.
And Matt Murray's been playing like so lately. They could, if I want to say it's fatigue, they played 2 back-to-backs. There's a little bit of travel. Granted, I don't think the flight from New York, it's like they were coming back from,
it's an hour and a half flight. Vancouver. I mean, it's an hour and a half flight. They can handle
it. It's not, it's, I don't know. It was really disappointing. And it's just, you know, the Canadiens are in the spot now. And I kind of wrote an article about it where it's just kind of, they're in this conundrum. They're in I call it the reset conundrum. Because, you know, this was supposed to be the first year of the reset. And I think we all agree, Habs fans, everyone agrees. No one was expecting to be this competitive. In terms of standings wise. You know, they weren't expecting them to be in the playoffs. You're expecting them to be a fun team to watch that kind of lost a lot of games but were entertaining. Kind of the opposite of what happened last year when they were just an eyesore and terrible. You know, you wanted them to lose more, but now that they're in this position where they can make the playoffs, for them strictly in terms of the reset and organizational development, they've played themselves out of a great draft pick. And I know people are going to say this draft is deep, but we'll only know if the draft is really deep when these players actually develop. And you play yourself into this draft pick where you're going to be picking 15th. And I know it's only 1 year, and I'm not trying to say the whole thing's coming crashing down, but it kind of stunts it a little bit because if I'm at the point where I think they need to make the playoffs. Because otherwise this season, while yes, it was a giant step forward, I think I'm not trying to say it's all a waste, but to pick 15 is, you know, in that area, I mean, it's just not great. And you're not going to be getting a franchise-changing player. You're going to maybe get a very solid NHL player, but chances are, it can't happen, but chances are you're not getting a player you would probably really need, you know, if you were picking in, let's say, the top 10. And I know it's kind of weird to want them to not be, I know it sounds kind of, I'm not trying to say like, oh, what a waste of a season, I'm so unhappy, and I know there's still track left and they can still make the playoffs, but I think they need to make the playoffs now. I think this is what they have to do to make this season not feel like a little, not that it's not going to be a disappointment, but it's going to take a little of the shine off, I think, if they end up finishing ninth.
Yeah, I agree with you.
A habit, and I'm not saying it will be, sorry, I'm really rambling, but you know, the Leafs did the great job with their rebuild and all that stuff, but just before that, they were that team who kept trying to make the playoffs and just missing, and it left, there were 10 years of, you know, bad to mediocre teams. And you don't want that to be the Habs thing. I'm not saying it will be, but it just feels like it's a little bit of the luster, I think, will be taken off this season if they don't make the playoffs, because they're going to be picking sort of in that no man's land in the first round.
So, I mean, what I sort of expected was this team to be fun to watch, but lose. And maybe be competitive, but sort of not really. And then be able to pick in the top 10 next year. And then really next year, that's when we're going to see not only them being fun to watch and fast and young, but them to start putting points on the board. And they surprised everybody and sort of overperformed, I think, in the first half of the season. And so far, you know, we've seen them come back to earth, I think, a little bit since Christmas. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, whether they make the playoffs or not this year, I think you're right in the sense that, if they don't make the playoffs after their start of the season, it's going to feel weird. It's not going to feel like, it'll be hard to accept because we've seen them be able to put 8 goals up. We've seen them be able to play with the best teams in the division. We've seen them be able to, do really well. And to miss out on a playoff stop by a whisper, you know, it's hard to then square Bergevin's suggestion that, you know, everybody was way too expensive, which he made at that presser on the trade deadline day, and which was like immediately rebutted on air by some of the TSN 690 guys, because we knew exactly what people cost. And it certainly wasn't too much to ask, to shore up the center position of Derek Brassard, for example, or to pick up another defenseman. There were deals to be made. It sounded like Bergevin sort of made calls in the morning and said, "Oh, these are way too much. That's it. We're done," and didn't. But if he did that, he did it for a reason, right? And so I'm happy with the Follin pickup. For nostalgic purposes, I sort of hope for. I don't know enough about Nate Thompson. I feel like he gives up the puck as much as he sort of keeps it. I know he wins faceoffs, but he made one sort of dangerous move last night. But overall, given that Niemi seems to have fallen out of favor, and whether that's real or imagined, is not getting starts, which is the only thing we can judge from the outside. The Canadians missed an opportunity to now. What I mean, Charlie Lindgren hasn't necessarily had a great year. It's not really clear what their option is without Niemi. All that to say, did they not make bigger moves at the trade deadline because they kind of hope this team will falter and play themselves into a better draft pick position? I don't know. I hear a lot of people saying with the wild card race that the Canadians are in, they may end up facing the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is, you know, essentially a one-way ticket out of the playoffs, given how good they are. But the reality is nobody knows what the final tally is going to be. No one knows which wildcard spot it's going to be. No one knows if one team falters, if a team that's doing really well loses a key player. I mean, there's still hockey to be played. So this whole navel-gazing about where people are going to end up and then trying to extrapolate out from who they're going to face in the first round, it seems a little bit silly to me. But I still don't understand why the Canadians didn't do more at the trade deadline. And I still don't – part of me doesn't see – you know, I heard a lot of people saying last night that Claude Julien is really happy with his fourth line. I don't know why. I don't know why he would be happy with his fourth line right now. He wants to be able to use them in tough spots. But last night they gave up the puck and they didn't put it in. And I don't – I mean, I know you're going to have something to say about the power play because it looked better last night than it has, but it's still league worst, I think, or you know, tied for league worst or whatever. Yeah. It's a weird position to be in, and I like the general thrust of your article in terms of, you know, these quick resets are exciting for fans, but organizationally they have consequences that aren't easy to predict at the outset, because you're building expectation toward one thing when what you really should be doing is accepting mediocrity for 1 year, and ensuring that you have the organizational depth and player development in place so that next year looks better than the year forward. But Connor, I come back to this idea that, you know, Price gets tired after playing 2 games in a row, and Shea Weber looks like he needs a wheelchair on the ice. I mean, it's we're in the window is closing with this cast of characters, and given how much money Weber and Price get paid to play these key positions, I think we need a little more now or never thinking in Montreal. And I don't know. You accused yourself of rambling. I feel like I was rambling.
No, it's you. You make good points, and if we can touch on the deadline, I think it's, you know the big rumor was sort of the Canadians were in on Matt Duchene before he went to Columbus, and you know the Bergeron said, oh, they asked for Kokkinen in a first, and okay, fine, but it's like he's never heard of negotiating, because if that's all they wanted and say, okay, there's no deal, then okay, you don't make the deal. But I don't think, you know, if I'm asking for players from your team and I want prospects, I'm asking for your best prospects, but it doesn't mean I'm going to end up with them. So I just think, you know, that whole thing where he just, like, he kind of said the same thing with when he was trying to trade for Ryan O'Reilly. He's like, oh, they wanted Poehling in the third overall pick. Well, yeah, they're going to ask for that. But, you know, if that's all they're asking for, you're not going to call them back, then you're not doing your job properly then. And I'm sure he's not giving out all the details, but it's just kind of this sort of, like, deflection mechanism he has now where he can say, well, this is, they're asking all this much, so I don't. It's like, okay, the first ask might have been that. But if you're not negotiating, you're not doing your job. And then that kind of bugs me, where he just, you know, he did, you know, I said he did it with Ryan O'Reilly because, you know, and now he's doing it again with Duchene. And who knows what's going to happen? Maybe they'll sign Duchene in the offseason. I don't know. But I just think, you know, players like Mark Stone went for a crazy high price in terms of what I think they got one of Vegas's better prospects for him. But, you know, Wayne Simmons then went for almost nothing. And I know Wayne Simmons isn't, you know, as good as Mark Stone right now, but I still think Wayne Simmons is a useful player they could have got. And I think the rental price was pretty good, you know? So, I don't know. He's always too afraid. At least it seems like, and everyone likes to point to the Vanek trade or the Peachy trade, but those weren't, I don't remember Mark Bergevin ever wanting to trade a first-round pick, and I know, and I'm not talking about in this specific instance, but it's like, you know, if you want to be competitive and you want to, sometimes you got to give up a first-round pick, especially when the Canadians were at the top of the East, you know, and they're winning their division, they're picking late first round. I mean, those picks haven't really panned out at all anyway. You know, if you want to look at, you know, McCarron and, Sherbak, you know, Bullier, you know, he didn't pick him. But, you know, those picks they got, they drafted late, they haven't worked out. Most of them are off the team. So, you know, you can't be afraid to trade your first-round pick if you're going to get way, if you're going to make your team better in the now. And to, like you said, this sort of window where everyone thinks the window is wide open because they're this young team, but they're number one defenseman right now, and he's looked terrible for at least, and people like to say a couple of weeks, but I think more a couple of months. And Carey Price, while he has played amazing, and I agree that, you know, it's the fatigue thing is a little wonky. He didn't play. You know, the problem is, because they played so screwy in New Jersey, they had to start him in Detroit. They couldn't take a chance, even though apparently Niemi has a crazy good record in Detroit. Or he might have one in New York, too. But it's, you know, they couldn't take a chance. And they're in this position where they can't hope that Niemi shows up or plays well, you know. Or they, you know, they have to cross their fingers he's not going to be terrible. And if you don't want to add something big, get a backup goalie. And I'm not saying Keith Kincaid is the savior, but I don't know if he brings something that's more stable than Niemi. But look, if they're not going to play Niemi at all, there's one more back-to-back next week in California. If he doesn't play any games there, it's like, why even have him? Like, you know, he doesn't, and you know, you might say, well, he's a veteran, he's got Stanley Cup experience, but I think if he has to play any prolonged period in the Stanley Cup playoffs, should they make it, the Habs are finished anyway. If Carey Price isn't, you know, in the Nets playing at his top level in the playoffs, the Canadians aren't doing any damage. So I don't think it matters that he has experience or anything like that, you know, like play. He won the Stanley Cup with Chicago. If you can't trust him in a regular season game against one of three of the worst teams in the NHL, how the hell are you going to trust him in a playoff spot or in a big game down the stretch when they need all the points they can get? So it's just kind of annoying that he didn't think, you know, like people were saying, go to Philadelphia, ask for Brian Elliott. He, you know, he's at least a more solid backup goalie.
Yeah, well, I remember that we had a Jimmy Howard conversation, which seemed really, that hasn't aged well after Tuesday night. No. So, I mean, I guess what it sounds like we're saying, both of us from kind of different perspectives, is that you know, we're not rooting against the Canadians in this last month or so, but there are some benefits to them not making the playoffs. Number one, they have a shot at a top 10 pick. And number two,
I don't mean to cut you off, but like the top 10 pick, I mean, if they want to fall to, let's say, which right now they're in the second wild card spot, they have to fall down, you know, let's say one, two.
Well, it's a lottery. It's a lottery. So you're maximizing your chances to get a top 10 pick, which, as we've said, that's your only guarantee that you're getting an NHL player because everyone else is a bit more of a crapshoot.
Odds are better anyway. But yeah.
Odds are much better that they'll actually play in the NHL and suit up. If Bergevin didn't strengthen the team at the trade deadline, if they don't seem to have a backup goaltender that they trust, and if breakdowns can occur in big games like we've seen over the past couple of weeks here, I don't know, man. I mean, you want to see them eke their way in to get swept by Tampa Bay or blown out by Toronto?
It gives them more. I think making playoffs, as you can say, it extends the good feeling. I don't think if they make playoffs, people are going to expect much. They're just going to expect. Like playoffs in Montreal, it's a lot of fun and the city's a buzz. And there's always this feeling that who knows. And if Carey Price is going, you know, as Carey Price can go, who knows, right? I mean, I'm not saying they can. I'm just saying you don't know that. And who knows? Maybe because right now they're tied with Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is ahead of them in the wild card. So Montreal right now would be playing Tampa. But who knows? If they finishes the first wild card, they're playing the Islanders. I'm not saying the Islanders are a pushover. But I think, you know, the Islanders are, it's definitely the easier route than the Lightning.
All right, so let's get into thinking through what's going to happen in the next month here or so, and I'm actually interested in your take on an interesting article I saw about the Canadians promoting from within based on players who are at various other colleges and even down in Laval. But before we get there, I think we better do our winners and losers of the week.
Yeah, we kind of got away from that, yeah. Sure, I'll start with winners and losers. My winner of the week, I'm going to take Yoel Armia. I think he had a very good week. He scored, he had the hat trick against the Rangers. He scored a goal in Detroit. I think he kind of kept doing all the other things he does very well in terms of forechecking and being responsible defensively. It was nice to see him get reward. It was nice to see him sort of, you know, get the monkey off his back because people were kind of clamoring because I don't think he'd scored in 12 games before Detroit. So it was nice to see him score and then keep it kind of rolling into Detroit. Into New York. And I think for those reasons, Yoel Armia is my winner of the week.
I can't argue with that. He would have been my winner if you hadn't taken him. I guess I gotta go. Shaw. As much as I don't necessarily want to, but picking up the hat trick I think is key, and then in general, he still is able to play that feisty game, despite the fact that, people are worried about his overall brain health and the history of concussion. He still plays that tough game, and he still got some finish. And he looked really, really good on Tuesday. And that's exactly what we need is secondary scoring from unexpected places to be able to win some of these tight games. Who is your loser this week?
I have three to pick from. I'll let you start with loser because I'll see who you take and maybe you'll take someone off my list because I kind of want to put them all in.
Well, based on the strong arguments you just made, I'm going a little bit off the board and saying my loser is Antony Niemi because this organization doesn't have any confidence in him. And that's not a good sign for a team that's trying to make the playoffs. I don't know to what extent. I mean, he certainly has looked, let's say, shaky his last couple of starts. Both in terms of tracking the puck and just his overall general position, even if he's still winning games, and I think he still has a winning record on the year, he's not trusted organizationally. And that is worrying, and it's especially worrying because they couldn't seem to find a replacement. And now I'm wondering, you know, I hear talk that they might be promoting from within. So let's get there when we get there. But my loser this week is Niemi for not having the organization's confidence.
He was on my list too. I like we spoke about it. I mean, if you can't get in there and playing in back-to-backs against, you know, if you can't make one game against New Jersey, Detroit, or the Rangers, there's big problems. And like I said, he's probably not going to see a game the rest of the way. I'm going to say Drouin, you know, because I love to pick on him. I had Weber on here too because I think Weber, he's just kind of carried his sort of play, but I had him last week, so I'm going to change up a little. And Drouin, you know, again, he was trying to do too much. I mean, last night I saw him try and dipsy doodle through the whole Penguins lineup, and it's just getting annoying where it seems like, you know, he thinks he can get the puck behind the net with some speed. And sure, he did it against Edmonton in that overtime goal when it was 3-on-3, but it's like he thinks all the time he can just dipsy doodle through a team because he's got speed, and that's not how this works. And, he keeps trying to make too clever of plays, and I don't know, it just, the whole thing, it's like the Canadiens sort of needed him to step up last night or step up in New Jersey, and he didn't really do much. And it was just, you know, for a guy who's supposed to be, again, and maybe it's because of what Marc Bergevin did or how he was sold to us, but, you know, he's supposed to be the sort of offensive catalyst, and he can be. But when the Habs needed him to sort of step up in games where they were struggling, he didn't. Even in Detroit, you know, even in New York, he wasn't the catalyst for the turnaround. And for that, I think, you know, he's my loser of the week because the Canadiens need him to start playing better.
Yeah.
Better than he played this week.
There was a moment last night in the power play, Drouin made a sweet move and instead of shooting, passed it to Weber, who was at this weird, very weird angle, looked like the bottom of the circle kind of. Weber had, I don't know, a crazy number of shots in the game last night. Hit a couple posts, got robbed a couple times, took out a few Penguins along the way. But I was surprised that Drouin didn't shoot in that situation. And I tend to agree. There's just too much of the flopping in the middle of the zone, you know, crazy backhand pass or trying to deke out three Penguins at once and then, you know, doing the little head flip, or he lost his stick at one point and he was like wandering around with his hands out. It's just like, go pick up your stick, dude. I mean, there's no other, the only thing to do right now is get your stick and get up ice. So yeah, he's starting to get on my nerves a little bit too. I think mostly because of the potential that he has, and it's so obvious he could be so amazing if he could just find the way to match the effort with the creativity. And we haven't when that also, when those two things come when that circle comes together, it's really amazing. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened enough,
or it happens too frequently. It's not consistent.
Yeah.
I know, I think people, and I guess I'm one of them, but I also realize that I think Joy is not a guy who's going to be the focal point of a team. He's more like a Phil Kessel where he needs to be insulated, and it's, you know, the Canadiens haven't necessarily insulated him properly yet. I know it's, you know, they're still trying to build the team and stuff, but right now he needs to be, and I know he's on pace to have his best point totals and stuff like that, but it's just too many nights where he's invisible. Or, you know, or just too many nights where he makes stupid plays and gives the puck over too many, too easily. And, you know, it's just, we're beating a dead horse here, but they need more. He needs to be more consistent, and that's just that. And they really could have used him this week in a week where they had, like we said, they needed to be better. I mean, even though they split the week, you know, it wasn't a terrible week. They needed to win more than they lost, and they needed one of their best offensive players to really be a catalyst, and he wasn't.
So I want to ask before we get to the week to come and the dreaded trip out west, which hopefully will go better than it has in years past. So if we take recent events to be indicative that Niemi doesn't have the organizational's confidence and
or at least the coach's confidence.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But he's not, you know, I guess the organization didn't trade for his replacement, so somebody still believes in him. But who is ahead of him in terms of Laval? Because I saw an interesting Twitter thread last night talking about that McNiven might actually be ahead of Lindgren now in the Habs depth chart. Lindgren's had a tough year. He had a hip injury. He was pulled the other night for allowing way too many goals on way too few shots. McNiven came in and played really well. Is this a scenario where we see the Rocket organization and the Canadians looking to that organization to help secure the goaltending position in Montreal?
Well, at this point, they have to, right? If they're not going to play Niemi, or but it seems like they're not, then they really, you know, they need to find someone who can play a game because, you know, as much as people want to make a big deal about Carey Price and the back-to-back thing, you still need your backup to play. He still needs rest. If he plays the rest of the way, it's you're going to tire him out because it also seems lately the Canadians are kind of slipping back and, you know, not outplayed, but I don't know. It just, you need to be able to give him a break. And I think it's also good for the team. And I think sometimes when the backup's in there, the team might play a little smarter or less. Not that they play careless, but less careless, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? It just seems like when the backup's in there, the team plays a little more responsibly, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And with Carey Price, sometimes they take a few more chances.
Because they know they'll bail them out.
Most of the time, exactly. So, you know, there's that. But if you also have zero confidence in your goaltender when he's in there, it makes you play too defensively or too responsibly, and that can get you into trouble. I don't know. It has to be. If they're not going to play Niemi, then they got to bring up someone who can play games. I mean, it might even just be two games, but someone's got to play. Carey Price does need time off to just rest, or, you know, he can't play. I think it's irresponsible for them to think he should play every game the rest of the way.
So what does that mean? They carry three goaltenders on their roster, or they bring Nick McNiven up for the West Coast trip, or like, I mean, do you think we're going to see Niemi get a start on the West Coast?
I think he has to. I think the game in Anaheim would be the ideal, but you know, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, people are saying San Jose, just I guess because he has a bit of history with the team, and I don't know if he has a good record against them, but I don't know. Someone's got to play one of those games, I think. It's not fair, even though the Canadians have three days off after that before they're back home to play Detroit, but someone's got to play one of those San Jose Anaheim games, and I don't think it's fair for Carey Price, I guess, and I don't know if I'm saying that properly, but, you know, the guy needs a break, even if it's a game, you know. Just the team needs to be able to play someone else other than Carey Price. And, you know, Niemi, for some reason, was able to do that, and now he's not.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's something's got to give. I mean, the idea is, let's say they ride Carey Price to the playoffs, he might be fatigued. And we also know he has some injury history with his knees. So you also don't want to exacerbate that, especially since it seems like the Canadians are starting to break down a little bit defensively more often. Like I said, if it's not Niemi, it's got to be with him because there's no one who are they going to sign off the street?
Nobody. They play the Kings on Tuesday night. It's a late start for folks who are planning to stay up on the East Coast. That's 10:30 start time. So I guess we find out Sunday night, I guess. Usually 5 o'clock is usually the time that team news comes out, but we'll know in terms of what team is traveling out west what they're going to do goaltender-wise. But I think you're probably right that either Thursday against the Sharks or Friday against the Ducks, we're going to see whoever's not Carey Price, probably Anthony Niemi. I tell you what, I don't like that Sharks game at all.
No.
The Ducks and the Kings don't have great records. And in any other year, you'd say, God, we hope Canadians can win one. But at this point in the season, we need them to win 2 out of 3 games, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, the Canadians can't really be dropping points here, especially against teams that are below them in the standings. The Kings game does concern me because I don't know what it is about the Kings, but they're able to keep the Canadians outside very easily, at least, again, to my knowledge. You know, I know at the beginning of the year, when the home opener, the Kings kind of smothered the Canadians. Even though the Canadians outshot the Kings, it was like nothing. No dangerous shots or anything like that, and they lost 4-0. Hopefully the Canadians can use their speed a bit better in L.A. You know, L.A.'s not necessarily the same team they were back in October, but it just seems like L.A., for whatever reason, has the recipe against the Canadians, or I guess it's just the way they are, how big they are, and they're able to sort of smother the Habs. The game I'm worried about is the one in San Jose, because I think it's pretty well documented. The Canadians haven't won in San Jose in, like, what, 10 years or something? So it's that's the game that can get out of hand, I think, because sometimes it does.
And honestly, the Sharks are I think, probably the best team in the West, right? I mean, they are a powerful team, and even though they tend to drop a game here and there, they have a lot of pretty serious pieces on that team.
Yeah, I just think that the only maybe saving grace would be if Martin Jones, who's having an uneven season from what I've been reading and stuff, he hasn't been as good as he was last year or the year before. Might be if you get, you know, wonky. If you get a wonky goaltender at the other end, I think all bets are off. But, yeah, I'm not – the San Jose game, I think, is going to be difficult. They should – I mean, they took care of Anaheim, two or three weeks ago in Montreal.
Yeah.
I think they should be able to keep it going against Anaheim. I think Anaheim's a team that's I don't know if broken is the right word, but I think they've accepted their fate. I think they've accepted it for a while, and I think they're kind of just happy. Not happy, but they're just playing out the string, and I think they shouldn't be trouble. And if they are trouble, then that speaks to the Canadians in another way. You know, it's, you know, like this week, I'm just looking, like, LA in their last 10, they're 1-6-3. Anaheim is 3-7. So it's just kind of these teams that you should be able to sort of crush. They both kind of accepted their fate. I mean, LA, they're the bottom two teams in the West, so they really should be able to handle
them. Well, let's hope it's more like Detroit and less like New Jersey, because
exactly,
those are two weak teams, and the Canadians brought very different levels of effort. I'm actually most worried about that first game, just because it's, you know, jet lag, and by the end of the week they should have found their feet. But I'm gonna call two games. I don't believe the Canadians will beat the Sharks. I believe they have a chance to beat the Kings and the Ducks. And who knows, maybe the secret weapon, Jordan Wheel, will find a way to make the lineup and score 10 goals this next week.
Yeah, well,
it's funny to me. People are talking about this guy. Like, I think he's scored 10 NHL goals in his career. He's played, I don't know, 250 games. And they're talking about, like, a power play specialist. Just wait till Wheel gets in the lineup. They'll really shake things up. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? We are, at this point, are just creating storylines to feed fan need to believe that this team having made no serious acquisitions at the trade deadline, are positioned now to make the playoffs and, you know, make some noise, or at least get out of the first round. And I don't know, man. I guess I'm feeling a little less confident than I have been in other weeks about whether this team is for real, because it's now or never, right? This is it. This is now or never.
No, exactly. And especially after, like, we've been talked about the week they had where they were very unimpressive. I mean, okay, outside of the Detroit game where they were able to find their legs and actually take advantage of the other team. Each game they started very poorly, and in a couple of them they couldn't get going at all. And it just, it's a little scary, because if they're going to come out flat a lot of the time, there's teams will jump on them and take advantage. And they're not a good enough team to be able to sort of bounce back from that, like Toronto did against Montreal. You know, Toronto has the high-end skill to sort of do that. And you can say, yeah, they got lucky with bounces and stuff, but we talked about it in the podcast last week. You know, the longer the game went on, the more Toronto grew and the more Montreal shrank a bit, you know, in terms of what was happening in the game. And so hopefully that game and didn't sort of play around with their psyche and make, you know, give them a bit of a complex. But yeah, I think if the Canadians can manage, they should win two games. They should beat the Kings. They should beat the Ducks. If they could somehow manage to get a loser point in Anaheim, in San Jose, sorry, that would be a tremendous week. I think we would agree. I think, you know, the Habs can't take any games for granted anymore. And, you know, they're not too they're not in a comfortable playoff position. And if they want to make the playoffs, then, you know, they're fighting for their playoff lives right now. They can't take a night off. They can't take a period off. They can't come out slow. They can't just think, oh yeah, we'll get them later. They got to start right away. They got to start hungry and hard and play well for, you know, 60 minutes. But, you know, you can't come out flat, because, you know, you might not be able to win a game in the first period, but you sure can lose one. And, you know, it's not fun to watch the Canadians come out in huge big games in a big week and sort of look at least to start most of the games, a little underwhelming, especially against poor teams. And now, you know, now they're going on this dreaded West Coast trip, which isn't usually kind to them. They can't afford to sort of just take it easy. And I'm not saying they will, but, you know, the last week sort of showed that they came out real uninspired, let's say, and they need to change that. They need to buck that trend. Otherwise, yeah, they're going to start tanking. You know, they're going to be on the outside looking in.
Are you ready for the pod title?
Oh, sure.
The Canadians need to best the West.
Ooh, I like it. Wordplays always work.
God, I should really write for Hallmark. Do you know what I mean? Do they? Yeah, is that still a job? That's not a job anymore, right? They just do that. Computers do that at this point.
They put in like. I don't think they have a room of. I don't think they have a room of writers coming up with. You know.
Not gold like that. I'll tell you that much.
No, exactly.
All right, Connor. Well, it's good to talk to you as always. And, yes. You know, we're touching cotton, as they say. And let's hope the Habs can figure it out.
Yeah, I think for all our sakes, let's hope they figure it out. Let's hope they have a respectable West Coast trip because I think a lot of people are dreading it. Anyway, for the last word on Habs podcast, I'm Connor LaPalme saying, Johannes, I hope you have a great week. And I hope we have a happier podcast to talk about next week.
I like it. Keep your stick on the ice, Connor.
Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.